Today's edition of the Daily Caller podcast is brought to you by Life Change Tea.
Why go to getthetea.com? Because this important news could change your life. Socrates made a statement saying that all disease starts in the gut. Take care of your gut, and well, the rest speaks for itself. Life Change Tea is a wonderful way to aid in your digestion. Brew it, steep it, drink it, and feel it go to work. We at Life Change Tea have been around for years helping people just like you feel better. Lots of testimonials and lots of happy people. Log on to getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. Getthetea.com.
All righty. Hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It's the Daily Caller podcast for the 23rd day of January 2020. I'm Derek Hunter, and I'm about 95%. 95%. Back, which it sounds like I have more energy. It's because I do have more energy. My insides are no longer trying to get outside of me. Not completely, not totally. Man, what a horrible, horrible thing. Anyway, thank you for tuning in and sticking with me and tolerating the one show where I had to run a rerun because I had to put something up, and the half a show yesterday, and the people on the radio. I'm back today as well on the radio. So if I go to an emergency commercial break on the radio, you'll know why. But yeah, I don't know what the hell happened. The wife and Bailey got sick on Friday night, late Friday night. Well, actually, the wife started feeling sick late Friday night. Saturday morning, I was woken up by Bailey vomiting in the crib next to me. And then it was just all day, just horrible for them. And I thought they must have eaten something. They must have eaten something. And the wife thought it was food poisoning too. And I thought, well, what did they eat that we didn't eat? I didn't know. Anyway, by Sunday evening, they were feeling better. The kid kind of got sick Monday morning, but they recover so quickly. They bounce back. They're not better, but they bounce back. And then, Monday after my radio show, I just started feeling like somebody had punched me in the stomach like an hour ago, that feeling. And I thought, what did I just eat? And I had some keto chocolate that I'd gotten. And I thought, huh, is that just sitting wrong? What's going on? And I went and laid down, and it was getting worse and getting worse. And then I heard the wife talking to Quinn, and Quinn had apparently thrown up during her nap. So I was like, oh, geez, here we go. So whatever it was some kind of virus, and it worked its way through the family, and it just wipes you out for like 48 hours where you have no energy at all. Luckily for the rest of the world, we kept it amongst the family. No one went anywhere. We didn't go to the store. We didn't do anything. We ate the food that we did eat. I had like a peanut butter and butter sandwich for 48 hours. You'd got it from home. So we hopefully stopped it in its tracks. If somebody else got it out there in the world, it didn't come from us. It probably came from whoever gave it to us. I don't know where the hell it came from, but it can go back. Evil, evil crap. Anyway, we've got a lot of stuff to get to, a lot of ground to cover, tons of audio on today's program. I am scheduled later today to interview Liz Harrington, the national spokeswoman for the Republican National Committee. We'll get into all the impeachment stuff. We'll talk to 2020 business. If you have anything you want to ask of Liz, email me, Derek, at dailycaller.com. Thank you guys for all the nice, understanding emails. But you heard me yesterday. The day before, it was worse. The day before, it was absolutely worse. I literally not spent that much time in bed. It's like 10 straight hours, and then I got up and went downstairs onto the couch for another 8 hours, just laying around, stretching, sleeping, waking up. It was just a horrible thing. Stretching was the best feeling in the world, if you know that feeling of sick. But much better now, knock on wood, hopefully, and everybody, although Quinn did get sick last night, so hopefully she had some tomato soup and she was able to eat. I gave her a bath when I got her up in the morning, and hopefully she'll be 100% again and causing trouble and terror in the background of this podcast again tomorrow, hopefully. or maybe even later. Who knows? We'll just have to see. We play it all by ear here on the Daily Daily Caller podcast. All right, let's have a little word from our sponsor, the Life Change Tea. If you need to be cleaned out and get some energy, I didn't need to be cleaned out, but I needed some energy. Go to getthetea.com. Getthetea.com. It has some amazing stuff up there. It's not all just tea. Lots of things for your health, lots of things for your energy, lots of things for your innards to get them working the way they should. The Get the Tea stuff, I love it. You brew up a gallon of it, you drink a cup of it a day, you don't overdo it, and it keeps you regular and helps you digest all the nutrition, absorb all the nutrition from the food that you eat. The food that you eat has less and less nutrition. It's processed, it's run through crap, it's got additives, it's all this stuff. Well, you need to get as much of it out of it as possible, as much as you possibly can. And that's where GetTheTea.com comes in. It cleans you out, keeps you regular, and allows your body the freedom and the space, quite frankly, to absorb all the goodness from your food. And you go there, you enter promo code Derek at checkout, boom, special savings just for this audience. You can't beat the deal. You can't beat the energy. I feel like it helped me recover too, because I feel fully energized after feeling like I'd been run over by a truck just yesterday. So getthetea.com, promo code Derek. Don't forget to hit apply. Get your special discounts. Help out the sponsors. Help out the program. Help out yourself. All right, let's get on with it. The Democratic strategy seems to be, as the name of yesterday's podcast suggested, well, it didn't suggest it, it said it blatantly. Their strategy seems to be to bore the hell out of everybody. If we cry for mercy, you know, they won't let you pour the water up the nose of a terrorist. But, man, if you want to bore the American people to death, forget waterboarding. Send the Democratic impeachment managers to Gitmo. They will give up everything. They'll give up Islam. Please make it stop. I'll become Christian. I'll become Jewish. Just get me out of this thing. Please stop this mess. Along those lines, and at the mercy of everybody, or because of the mercy for everybody that I feel who didn't watch this thing, I have just a little bit to play. It's kind of funny. They're all down there. They're making their opening arguments. And the drooling media is like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. It's such a wonderful case. Can you believe this case? This is an ironclad case. My God, these impeachment managers are just amazing attorneys. The case that they're presenting down there. Look, if you can't present a convincing case when you are unfettered by any restrictions and not challenged at all, you got no business being a lawyer. You got no business being in court. You got nothing. It's like, of course, everybody's opening statement is going to be wonderful and amazing and convincing. But you're not supposed to. You would think that the TV analyst lawyers and what have you would, I don't know, be aware of this fact. Jennifer Rubin of the Washington Post, she's the conservative blogger. She's the woman I affectionately refer to as a bridge troll because, well, she looks like a bridge troll. She's supposed to be a conservative blogger at the Washington Post, which is funny. She's nothing but, she's nothing close to it. She tweeted out, "This is the most brilliant legal presentation I have ever heard. None comes close. The tone, the facts, the anticipated defenses. I am in awe." They needed to replace her chair at MSNBC. She didn't say that on the air. She said that on Twitter, but she's an MSNBC contributor. They tend not to roll her out during daylight hours because of the children. Joyce Alleen, who is another legal analyst and a law professor and a legal analyst over at MSNBC, responded, "Plus one, I've heard some very fine lawyers. Schiff has earned a place among them." They had to steam clean all the upholstery in the green room at MSNBC and then still set it on fire. These people are insane. They're getting sexually aroused. But what? What are they getting sexually aroused by? I have a little bit of a clip. It's sort of a best of. This was not compiled by me. This was compiled by the Democratic blog called Politico. So this is the best bits. as ordered by the Democratic Party. It's about 2 minutes long. I'll spare you. It's not, you know, the droning on and on of Adam Schiff, but tell me if you've heard that this is the most brilliant legal presentation you've ever heard. In fact, nothing ever comes close. Does this leave you in awe, or does this make you yawn?
We are here today in this hallowed chamber, undertaking this solemn action for only the third time in history, because Donald J. Trump, the 45th President of the United States, has acted precisely as Hamilton and his contemporaries feared. President Trump solicited foreign interference in our democratic elections, abusing the power of his office to seek help from abroad to improve his reelection prospects at home. And when he was caught, he used the powers of that office to obstruct the investigation into his own misconduct. This is significant, for President Trump had no interest in fighting corruption, as he would claim after he was caught. Rather, his interest was in furthering corruption by the announcement of investigations that were completely without merit.
I want to stop it right there for a second. Interrupt Adam Schiff. I'm sorry if you were fantasizing about him at that moment, but I just want to stop it right there, because you've got to love, this is the way the Democrats work, and this is being echoed by the media. Any investigation to Joe Biden and Hunter Biden, whether it's completely without merit, completely without merit. They've done no investigation. They've asked Joe Biden, hey, is your son corrupt? And he said, hell no. Did you do that? No, I did never do that. Hunter Biden, are you corrupt? No, hell no. I got that job. I don't know why I got that job. I just got that job, you know? There's been no investigation whatsoever into Hunter Biden's ties and work with Burisma and how it came to be. Not by the mainstream media. They've simply declared it to be meritless. Yet when asked, Hunter Biden, why were you hired by Burisma? Why did they just shovel money hand over fist at you and you have no qualifications whatsoever? His answer is, well, I don't know. I don't know. You know, I don't know, but I'm not going to turn it down. That's the best defense they could come up with. And the media just says there's been no allegations whatsoever. No proof, nothing. Well, it's really hard to find proof when you're not looking for proof. It's really hard to find proof when you've denied its existence in the first place. So what kind of investigation are you going to get by people who say there's nothing to find here? Would you feel comfortable if you, you're a prosecutor and you assign an attorney to a case and they say, go out there and investigate this murder? And say, well, I don't know what you expect me to find. There ain't really nothing out there, but I'll go ahead and look. I don't really know. It probably a suicide. They probably sawed their own head off. No, you wouldn't accept that. That would be insane. You certainly wouldn't go and talk to OJ and say, OJ, did you saw off Ron and Nicole's head? Well, no, I didn't. Oh, all right. Well, moving on then. Who else could it have been? Let's go look around. No, I don't think you would do that. But on the issue of Joe Biden, it is immediately accepted as gospel by the media. There's nothing wrong. There's not even the hint of scandal. Nothing. No implications. Biden is being smeared by the president of the United States. Meanwhile, they're smearing the president of the United States with unfounded allegations. These are unfounded allegations. Well, there's a lot of proof. Where's the proof? Well, we have the proof. Don't worry about that. We'll show it at the appropriate. We had enough evidence, an ironclad case that was worthy of impeachment. Oh, okay. So then present that to the Senate. Well, we can't present that to the Senate. We need evidence. We need more evidence, and we need witnesses. Well, you didn't need that to formulate your ironclad case, so why do you need it now? This is obstruction. How dare you? Now, of course, there's nothing at all to suggest. I would never try to sully the reputation of somebody as noble as Senator Joe Biden. But I would, because the facts do. In the New York Post the other day, there was an op-ed of Peter Schweitzer. He has a new book out, Profiles in Corruption, Abuse of Power by America's Progressive Elites, in the New York Post. I'm going to try to get him on the show, but he's a tough guy to nail down because he's obviously got bigger fish to fry than this podcast. But hopefully, eventually, we can get to him. Its political figures have long used their families to root power and benefits for their own self-enrichment. One particular politician, Joe Biden, emerges as the king of sweetheart deals. No less than five family members benefiting from his largesse, favorable access and powerful positions for commercial gain. In Biden's case, those deals include foreign partners and in some cases even U.S. tax dollars. But I thought that Joe Biden was just an honest public servant who spent his whole life just scraping by on a lowly senator's salary and trying to feed his family. The Biden family's apparent self-enrichment involves five family members: Joe's son Hunter, son-in-law Howard, brothers James and Frank, and sister Valerie. When the subject came up in 2019, Biden declared, quote, "I never talk to my son or brothers or anyone else, even distant family, about their business interest, period." Well, here's about James Biden. Joe's youngest brother, James, has been an integral part of the family political machine from the earliest days when he served as finance chair of Joe's 1972 Senate campaign. And those two have remained quite close. After Joe joined the U.S. Senate, he would bring his brother James along on congressional delegation trips to places like Ireland, Rome, and Africa. When Joe became vice president, that's a sweetheart deal. When Joe became vice president, James was a welcome guest at the White House, securing invitations to such important functions as a state dinner in 2011 and the visit of Pope Francis in 2015. Sometimes James's White House visits dovetailed with his overseas business dealings, and his commercial opportunities flourished during his brother's tenure as vice president. What a horrible, strange coincidence. You won't hear about this on CNN. Consider the case of Hillstone International, a subsidiary of the huge construction management firm Hill International. The president of Hillstone International was Kevin Justice, who grew up in Delaware and was a longtime Biden family friend. It really pays to know the Bidens, even though the Bidens say they don't have any money. On November 4th, 2010, according to White House visitor logs, Justice visited the White House and met with Biden advisor Michelle Smith in the office of the vice president. Less than 3 weeks later, Hillstone announced that James Biden would be joining the firm as an executive vice president. James appeared to have little to no background in housing construction, but that didn't seem to matter to Hillstone. His bio on the company's website noted his, quote, 40 years of experience dealing with principals in business, political, legal, and financial circles across the nation and internationally, end quote. Wow, that's really going to help you out in construction contracting, isn't it? James Biden was joining Hillstone just as the firm was starting negotiations to win a massive contract in war-torn Iraq. 6 months later, the firm announced a contract to build 100,000 homes. It was part of a $35 billion, 500,000-unit project won by Track Development, a South Korean company. Hillstone also received a $22 million U.S. federal government contract to manage a construction project for the State Department. Now, I don't know what they were paying James Biden, but it sure as hell wasn't $22 million. David Richter, son of the parent company's founder, was not shy in explaining Hillstone's success in securing government contracts. "It really helps," he told investigators at a private meeting, "to have, quote, the brother of the vice president as a partner," according to one person who was there. The Iraq project was massive, perhaps the single most lucrative project for the firm ever. In 2012, Charlie Gasparino of Fox Business reported that Hillstone officials expected the project to generate $1.5 billion in revenue over the next 3 years. That amounted to more than three times the revenue produced by the company in 2011. Now, isn't that amazing? A group of minority partners, including James Biden, stood to split about $375 million. Quote, "There's plenty of money for everyone if this project goes through," said one company official. The deal was all set, but Hillstone made a crucial error. In 2013, the firm was forced to back out of the contract because a series of problems, including a lack of experience by Hill and Track Development, its South Korean associate. But Hillstone continued doing significant contract work that the embattled country, including a six-year contract with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. James Biden remained with Hill International, which accumulated contracts from the federal government for dozens of projects, including projects in the United States, Puerto Rico, Mozambique, and elsewhere. With the election of his father, and then it goes into Hunter Biden, and then Howard Crean, I guess is how you pronounce it, K-R-E-I-N. It would be a dream for any new company to announce their launch in an Oval Office, or in the Oval Office at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. Startup Health is an investment consultancy based out of New York, and in June 2011, the company barely had a website. The firm was the brainchild of three siblings from Philadelphia: Stephen Crean, a CEO and co-founder, with his brothers, Dr. Howard Crean, who serves as chief medical officer, and Sister Barry serves as the firm's chief strategy officer. A friend named Unity Soaks is also a co-founder and serves as president. Startup Health was barely up and running when in June 2011, two of the company's executives were ushered into the Oval Office of the White House. There they met with President Barack Obama and Vice President Joe Biden. The following day, the new company would be featured at a large healthcare tech conference being run by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and Startup Health executives became regular visitors to the White House, attending events in 2011, 2014, and 2015. Now, that's a pretty sweetheart deal to a company that barely existed just before then. What happened? How did Startup Health gain access to the highest levels of power in Washington? There was nothing particularly unique about the company, according to Schweitzer. But for this, the chief medical officer of Startup Health, Howard Crean, is married to Joe Biden's youngest daughter, Ashley. What? That's weird. Quote, I happened to be talking to my father-in-law that day, and I mentioned that Steve and Unity were down in Washington, D.C., recalled Howard Crean. He knew about Startup Health and was a big fan of it. He asked for Steve's number and said, I have to get them up there to talk with Barack. The Secret Service came and got Steve and Unity and brought them to the Oval Office, according to Howard. Startup Health offered to provide new companies technical and relationship advice in exchange for a stake in the business, demonstrating and highlighting the fact that you can score a meeting with the President of the United States certainly helps prove a strategic company asset. High level contacts. Vice President Joe Biden continued to help Crean promote his company at several appearances through his last months in the White House, including one in January 2017, where he made a surprise showing at Startup Health's festival in San Francisco. The corporate event, open only to Startup Health members, enabled 250 people in attendance to chat in a closed session with the vice president. Now, isn't that lovely? Now, I could go on. There are other Bidens. It seems like you have to be a fool to be related to Joe Biden and not have gotten rich off of his tenure as vice president or his tenure as United States senator, since Hunter Biden was paid a boatload of money by Burisma and China while his dad was vice president of the United States. But Hunter also got a sweetheart deal, a job sitting on the board of heavily taxpayer subsidized Amtrak, while his dad was senator from Delaware. And his dad as senator was the one who kept Amtrak alive. Most people don't know this, but I don't think you'd be surprised to know that railroad train is not the most efficient way to travel in this country. Most people don't take it. It's nice. It's wonderful. But why would you take a train that takes you 3 days or 4 days to go from New York to Los Angeles, and you have to switch trains, and God knows you probably have to take a bus somewhere in there or whatever, when you can hop on a plane and get there in a few hours? It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. The idea of seeing the country from the train is nice and romantic, but it's not very practical. But Hunter Biden served on the board of Amtrak for years. Now, why? What would he bring to it? Nothing. except for the fact that his father was bringing in more than $1 billion a year in subsidies to Amtrak, thereby keeping the company, the pseudo-private public company, afloat. Well, if your sugar daddy has a kid who needs a job, or has a kid that you can employ to make sure that your sugar daddy remains your sugar daddy, aren't you going to consider him, put him on the board? How much money did Hunter Biden raise and make from Amtrak? How much? Who knows? But it was our money. It went directly from our taxes into his pocket. But to say and suggest that something that happened in Ukraine involving the Bidens, that anything involving anybody named Biden could possibly be remotely corrupt or even just a little bit shady, is beyond the pale and probably racist for suggesting it. And it's just dismissed out of hand immediately by the media and the Democrats, but I repeat myself. I just had to stop Adam Schiff there for a second because, well, he's full of Schiff. Now we rejoin him.
When the president's scheme was exposed and the House of Representatives properly performed its constitutional responsibility to investigate the matter, President Trump used the same unrivaled authority at his disposal as commander-in-chief to cover up his wrongdoing. In unprecedented fashion, the president ordered the entire executive branch of the United States of America to categorically refuse and completely obstruct the House's impeachment investigation. Such a wholesale obstruction of congressional impeachment has never before occurred in our democracy, and it represents one of the most blatant efforts at a cover-up in history.
Just to stop it there for a second, if you're still awake, the president exerted his rights as president of the United States to challenge subpoenas and to exert executive privilege. It was the House of Representatives who decided not to take it to court. So I'm not really sure how that computes, but it doesn't have to compute because this is Adam Schiff. This is the Democrats' case. He's preaching to a Democrat choir. This is about tainting the election. You want to talk, oh, foreign interference in the election, foreign interference in the election. What about domestic congressional interference in the election? What about weaponizing the Congress and screeching the Congress to a halt because you don't have an election strategy and you have unpalatable candidates? You have awful candidates. And so you decide we can't beat him, so we have to damage him. It's the only way we can beat him. So if we can paint this scarlet eye on his chest, then we might be able to beat him with one of our god-awful socialist candidates. I'll take foreign interference any day of the week, because the so-called foreign interference that they're trying to clutch their pearls over amounts to the possibility of finding out whether or not an American politician was corrupt, only doing it overseas. See the problem there? It sends a message. If you're going to be corrupt as a politician, do it overseas, and you better run for president. You just have to announce that you're going to run for president, and then nobody can look into it, because that would be foreign interference in our political process, and that is beyond the pale. It's out of sight, out of mind. Imagine running your marriage that way. I don't think that would work out very well. If it doesn't happen within the board, I know some people, if it doesn't happen, man, out of state, out of mind. It's a different type of, they weren't necessarily married at the time, these people, but it was equally as scummy as Adam Schiff for brains is. He continues.
The president's misconduct cannot be decided at the ballot box, for we cannot be assured that the vote will be fairly won.
Does anybody out there remember the 2016 election? Do you remember the final debate when Chris Wallace asked Donald Trump, if Hillary wins, will you accept the results of the elections? Well, I don't know. I'd have to see the results of the election before I know. You know, you never know what's going to happen. And everybody on the left went berserk. Donald Trump is threatening our very democracy by saying that you cannot, he might not accept the results of the election. That the peaceful transition of power is a hallmark of the United States of America. My God, can you believe this monster is saying that he might not accept the results of the election? Well, there's a Democrat right there on the floor of the Senate saying, "We, if Donald Trump wins, we can't really accept the results of the 2020 election." And also, they've never accepted the results of the 2016 election. Ask anybody down in Georgia whether or not Stacey Abrams has accepted the results of the 2018 gubernatorial election. She still runs around the country making a ton of money, claiming that she's really the governor of Georgia. Hillary Clinton, pretty much every Democrat, as a matter of fact, running for president, said Stacey Abrams, really, if there was a fair election, she would have been the governor of Georgia. Democrats have made a business out of not accepting the results of the elections that they lose. That's all they do. Now, like, we don't know if we can accept the results of the election if Donald Trump wins. Because of what? Because of the power of Ukraine? What if we take at face value what Democrats are saying Donald Trump did, that he deserves to be removed from office for, what was it that Donald Trump did? He said, and using their generous interpretation, giving them all the benefit of the doubt, which they don't deserve, and it's not true and it's not backed up by the transcript, but they're not being bound by reality, so they're making a different argument. The thing that they asked Ukraine to do was, hey, there's a lot of shady dealings going on with Hunter Biden and Burisma, and Joe Biden used his power as vice president and $1 billion in U.S. aid to make sure that the previous government fired a prosecutor that was looking into this company. That seems a little bit shady, and I'd like to know if that was on the up and up. Can you look into that? That would be the extent of the so-called invitation for Ukraine to interfere in U.S. elections. That's it, right there. Now, if Ukraine does the investigation and they say, we found nothing, Joe Biden's in the clear, makes President Trump look like a fool, saying, oh, this guy wanted this investigation. You got it. There's nothing there. Now, these are the same people who are running around there saying, Donald Trump, if he did nothing wrong, he should cooperate with the congressional impeachment inquiry, like they'd give him a fair shake. If Donald Trump has nothing to hide, then why wouldn't he come down and testify himself? If Donald Trump has nothing to hide, why won't he turn over all documents? Why won't he allow everybody who gave him advice on anything related to foreign policy come down and totally betray the office of president and make it impossible for future presidents to be able to do any deliberations internally whatsoever? Well, you see the problem there? If he has nothing to hide, he'd come down and do it. Well, if Joe Biden has nothing to hide, Joe Biden should be asking for the investigation in Ukraine, shouldn't he? I mean, if you're just going to use their arguments against them, why isn't Joe Biden out there demanding Ukraine not only investigate him, but he would cooperate completely. He would unseal all his vice presidential documents. He would unburden all of his staff when he was vice president and allow them to say anything, answer any questions whatsoever. It would clear his name. He has nothing to hide, right? But Joe Biden doesn't have to do that. Joe Biden's already been exonerated. Joe Biden, before anybody knew the extent and still knows the extent of the involvement and potential shadiness that went down in Ukraine, he's already been absolved. He's been pardoned before he's been charged by the media and by other Democrats. Hey, you know, we don't even need to look into that. Well, why would Joe Biden fear an investigation if it's going to exonerate him? Anybody asking that question? Of course, nobody's asking that question. That question only leads to unpleasant places. And hell, Joe Biden can barely handle himself in pleasant places. He's not going to want to have unpleasant questions asked about him. Should be fairly easy. Hunter Biden could call up his buddies who paid him millions of dollars at Burisma and say, hey, give all the records. And he could go, here are all my records. Here's access to all of my email. Go ahead and look at it. Here's everything the vice president has. Go ahead. It's an open book. But it's not an open book. It's a very much closed book that by now has probably been a burned book, to be perfectly honest with you.
The House believes that an impartial juror, upon hearing the evidence that the managers will lay out in the coming days, will find that the Constitution demands the removal of Donald J. Trump from his office as President of the United States. But that will be for you to decide. With the weight of history upon you, and as President Kennedy once said, a good conscience, your only sure reward. I suggest to you today the only conclusion consistent with the facts and law, not just the law, but the Constitution, is clear, as described by a constitutional law expert's testimony before the House. If this conduct is not impeachable, then nothing is.
Yes, if this vague, bastardized version of the truth is not enough to remove a president, then nothing is. Nothing at all. You gotta love these people. Now, I also appreciate the irony of quoting John F. Kennedy about having a clean conscience. Yeah, he probably wasn't haunted at all. He had an inflated sense of entitlement, but not really. You cite JFK, it's like citing JFK to your wife. You know, fidelity is an important thing. Just look at JFK. He demanded fidelity of his wife, not of him. Not of him, but no. But that was it. Now, upon hearing that very long argument, which was condensed there by the Democratic blog Politico, the media immediately got the vapors. Oh, my Lord, can you believe that's such a wonderful case? Again, if you are unburdened by challenge, you can present any kind of case. I could present a very compelling case that the earth is flat and that the moon landing was faked. And it was filmed by, what's-his-face, the guy who did Full Metal Jacket, Stanley Kubrick, in a Hollywood soundstage, if there was no pushback whatsoever. That's all an opening statement is. It's just your side without regard. You get to pick and choose which parts of your side you want to do. You get to ignore the alternatives. You get to ignore the counterarguments. You get to blow it all off and go straight forward with it. Upon hearing that, the CNN senior legal analyst Jeffrey Toobin took to the airwaves over at CNN. Wolf Blitzer and Jake Tapper were all but smoking a cigarette in their refractory period after watching this. And they go to Jeffrey Toobin, who was still had the vapors. And his response was indicative of every response on the left.
I want to go to Jeffrey Toobin, our chief legal analyst. He's been watching this very closely. So what did you think of the presentation by the lead House manager, Adam Schiff?
I thought it was dazzling. I thought the way he wove through both the facts of the case and the historical context was really remarkable. It was the second best courtroom address, since it's like a courtroom, that I ever heard, after a prosecutor named Jonathan Benedict in the Michael Skakel case in Connecticut was the best I ever heard, and it's still the best. But that was, when you consider the volume of information he covered, using the video, as I think Jake mentioned earlier, the witness testimony, the documents, it's very persuasive stuff.
It's very persuasive stuff. I was dazzled. Oh, my goodness. Oh, yes, he is paid for his unvarnished, unbiased opinion. He's paid well. I don't know why CNN has money to burn, and Lord knows they burn it. But that was the gist of the response to Adam Schiff throughout the entirety of the day. Oh, my God, he's so brilliant. Can you believe the way he read word for word from his spiral notebook? Yes, they all had three-ring binders. You want to know what happened during the month-long delay? Democrats scripted this out. They put together visual aids. They were ready to go. That's why they needed so much time. See, you can't just present the case. You can't just say what you have, because you don't have anything. You have to polish that turd as best you can. So you got to have visual aids where you take cuts, just enough of cuts out of context so that you can make the words seem like they mean anything. You know, like the President of the United States saying that Article 2 lets him do anything he wants. That was something that Adam Schiff played several times throughout the day. Article 2, I can do whatever I want. And Adam Schiff interpreted that for the senators as meaning that Donald Trump thinks he can just do whatever he wants willy-nilly. Well, that's not what the president was saying. See, the reason Adam Schiff just played small clips of that is because the whole clip of that, well, it doesn't make the case that Adam Schiff was making. Here's where it comes from. It's the interview that Donald Trump did with George Snuffleupagus when, for some weird reason, he gave ABC News and This Week unfettered access to him for like 36 hours or whatever it was. They were discussing firing Robert Mueller. This was after the Mueller report had come out, and Donald Trump had not fired Robert Mueller. There was all this talk of Donald Trump. If Donald Trump fires Robert Mueller, well, that'll trigger a constitutional crisis. That he can't fire Robert Mueller. Actually, Robert Mueller was not an appointee of Congress. Robert Mueller was an employee of the executive branch. And Article 2 of the Constitution puts the President of the United States firmly in charge of the executive branch. Ergo, he can fire anybody in it he wants who is a political appointee. The civil service rules would screw up getting rid of a lot of incompetent people, unfortunately. But as far as political appointees and non-civil servant jobs, the President of the United States can call you up at random. He can have a list of phone numbers. And these are all the people who are non-civil service employees of the government. And he can just call them up and say, hey, you're fired. I don't know who this is, but you're fired. Get out, clean out your desk. Security's on their way. You're going to get out of here. You're fired. And there's not a damn thing anybody could do about it. That is what President Trump was referring to when he talked about Article 2 allows him to do anything he wants. So let's just listen to President Trump tell George Stephanopoulos that with the context that every Democrat on the face of the earth doesn't seem to want you to get.
Or he believed it because I would constantly tell anybody that would listen, including you, including the media, that Robert Mueller was conflicted. Robert Mueller had a total conflict of interest. I didn't say that. Look, Article 2, I would be allowed to fire Robert Mueller. There was not, assuming I did all of the things I said I want to fire him. Number one, I didn't. He wasn't fired. Okay, number one, very importantly. But more importantly, Article 2 allows me to do whatever I want. Article 2 would have allowed me to fire him.
Oh, hey, that's weird. That's not at all the context that Adam Schiff continually frames that quote in, is it? No, he's just talking about other things in general, anything in general. The president says that Article 2 allows him to do whatever he wants, as if Donald Trump is just walking around thinking that the presidency is some sort of absolute power. It's as if the Adam Schiff believes that Donald Trump thinks that just because he has a pen and a phone, he can rewrite immigration law or something crazy like that, or something that Adam Schiff would cheer. See, they don't want you to see the whole picture. Remember, Monty Python, the foot, the big, you know, splat foot that comes out, the big old splat foot that comes out, that was just a tiny piece of foot that was from a much, much larger painting. You have no idea what the painting was. Nobody knows what the painting was. But, and speaking of Monty Python, Terry Jones died yesterday. That's horrible. Comic genius. But it's just a tiny, if you just saw that foot, you think it's just some cartoon foot. It's actually from a famous Renaissance painting, I believe, of a cherub. It's a cherub's foot. But you just see that foot. You have no context. And you just think it's you know, some ridiculous foot that they drew and painted or whatever and used there. But no, it was not. But that's all the context you get, and you have to fill in the rest, and they can make that story, the rest of it, anything they want. And that's what Adam Schiff was doing in his remarks. Again, another thing that Adam Schiff did that Chris Wallace called him out for on Fox News was Adam Schiff talking about Mick Mulvaney, the chief of staff, the president's chief of staff, talking about, well, just get over it, and talking about the idea of a quid pro quo, which, by the way, the president was not accused of by the House of Representatives. The House managers are spending an awful lot of time making a case for charges that they did not charge the president with. It's weird. It's like going after O.J. Simpson for tax evasion during his murder trial. Like, yeah, he's not charged with tax evasion. You're making an interesting case here that has nothing to do with the case at hand. That's what the Democrats are doing. So listen, I'm not going to play the Schiff audio. It's irrelevant. You've heard it 1,000 times. The Mulvaney saying, you just got to get over it. Well, Chris Wallace, who is no fan of this president, who is no conservative by any stretch of the imagination, actually has a problem with Adam Schiff lying like this. These lies of omission and these lies through creative context. Make no mistake, they are lies. These are not just omissions. It's not just a little oopsie daisy. If you tell somebody something you know is false, you are not conveying misinformation. You are lying. There's a nice concise word for that. It's called lying. It's pretty simple. It's pretty basic. Most people understand it. Children understand it. You would think that journalists would be able to understand it. They just don't seem to think to. Just to put a fine point on this thing about lying, Mark Caputo, who is a liberal blogger for Politico, he's tweeting out an Atlantic article about the big 1619 project by the New York Times, where they try and say the whole country is founded on race and everything is racist and blah, 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 blah. And this country's history starts the day the first African slave set foot on this continent. It's a bunch of crap. It's a bunch of liberal garbage to try and make other liberals feel better about how bad they feel about themselves. It's pathetic. But they've just come up and they keep finding more and more factual errors. The more people who read this thing, people who know what they're talking about, read this giant New York Times project, they keep spotting more errors, not spelling errors, not, oh, you have the wrong date here or this name is misspelled, but significant substantive errors. And the New York Times keeps refusing to make corrections. They acknowledge some of the mistakes, but they don't let it change their behavior or their printed words. And Mark Caputo tweeted out an Atlantic article, which is, you know, friendly fire, which is the only fire that the left takes seriously. Any criticism from the right, no matter how footnoted, no matter how factually accurate, they just don't care. They just ignore it. But from the left, they suddenly realize that, you know, that left criticism could be reaching their target audience. So they're going to have to be careful and at least address it. Mark Caputo tweeted out an article from The Atlantic pointing out more errors. And he wrote, it seems as if the New York Times 1619 project has historical errors. The paper refuses to correct them and, in a rebuttal to critics, made more errors. Well, if you are making errors and you know they are errors and you continue to make those errors, if you continue to disseminate information you know to be incorrect because it is inconvenient for the narrative you are trying to construct, there's a very simple word for that. It's a three-letter word, and it's lie. You don't have to play the thesaurus game. You don't have to play this little game of twisting and turning the definition of words and finding new ways to say something so it doesn't sound like you're really saying what you're saying. The New York Times is lying. But the left won't allow themselves to point out that the New York Times is lying because they agree with the underlying premise that this country is awful and racist and horrible and everybody in it is awful and racist and horrible and we must all be condemned to hell forever or vote Democrat, which would basically be cutting out the middleman and condemn us to hell forever. But it's just that kind of wordsmithing that is the garbage that Adam Schiff is trying to pull. The left doesn't have originality. They use the same tactics all the time. And that's why I point out that thing here. Oh, we are joined. During the last edit, I went and got Quinn, who was awake. Quinn, do you want to say hello?
I'm looking at the blue hair.
Yeah, are you feeling better?
Yes, I'm falling.
You're falling? Are you waking up or are you sleeping?
No, I'm waking up.
All right. But you're feeling better, no more sick?
Yes, I'm not better.
Good. Everybody's glad to hear that. Okay, now here is Chris Wallace. It is. She's doing better. She's eating again. French fries. It ain't exactly health food, but as long as she's eating something. Late night French fries to have the metabolism to handle that. Here is Chris Wallace calling out Adam Schiff.
I just want to make one point about a specific line that Adam Schiff used a lot. He kept using the line from Mick Mulvaney, get over it, and saying, well, are we going to just get over it? Before I interviewed Mick Mulvaney the week of his problematic news conference, I went back and looked at that statement in detail, and that's not what Mick Mulvaney said at all. He did say get over it, but he was talking specifically about the fact that there is politics in foreign policy, and specifically that when Barack Obama is conducting his foreign policy, it's going to have a different political flavor and a different policy agenda than when Donald Trump is. And each president, they're elected, is fulfilling his mandate. He wasn't saying that this kind of quid pro quo, get over it, just accept it. He was talking specifically about the idea of policy and politics in a foreign policy agenda. So, quite frankly, and I think that Adam Schiff made an effective argument for his side of the case, but he completely misrepresented what Mick Mulvaney said when he said, get over it.
I don't understand the hesitancy to just use the word lie. He's repeatedly mischaracterizing something is a lie. Taking something out of context to put it into a new context where it suits your needs but gives it the opposite meaning or a meaning it does not have is a lie. If I have you on audio saying, look, you think I went out there and I killed that guy because he looked at me wrong? You're insane. I would never do that. Now, if I just took the part where you said, I killed that guy because he looked at me wrong, and then I went around and said, you know, this guy's a murderer. This guy, I've got him confessing it right there, and I keep playing the tape. I killed that guy because he looked at me wrong. And it kept coming back to me and saying, you know, it's you wouldn't want this guy in your neighborhood. This guy kills people because they look at him wrong. Would that be a lie, or would that be me mischaracterized? Which would you call it? Are you a damn liar, or are you're a damn mischaracterizer? But Washington, D.C. is polluted with this polite speak, where very few people actually call a spade a spade. People don't like to call a liar a liar, unless it's Donald Trump, and then he tells, you know, hey, Mr. President, what time is it? It's 12:47. Oh, no, sir, it's 12:48. You're a damn liar. That's CNN and MSNBC's business model. But Adam Schiff repeatedly mischaracterizing, taking things out of context, putting them in his own context, and changing their meanings. Why, that's just, that's creative license. Why, that's also, it could be any number of things. Perhaps Mr. Schiff is fully unaware of the entirety of the context. We must give him the benefit of the doubt. Why? He got the benefit of the doubt when he released a report declaring that there was absolutely no FISA abuse, and all of those FISA applications on Carter Page were 100% legitimate and warranted. Nothing shady going on there, and in fact, he accused Republicans and Devin Nunes of lying. But it turns out that Adam Schiff was lying. He's never been called out for that. The media immediately started parroting Adam Schiff, going, well, as Congressman Schiff proved, Devin Nunes was really just taking massive liberties with the truth there in his report that said there was FISA abuse. There's no proof of FISA abuse, as Adam Schiff has shown. Adam Schiff didn't show anything. Adam Schiff lied to reporters. Actually, he didn't lie to reporters. When you have a receptive audience wanting the lie, what Adam Schiff did was he provided reporters with cover to continue the narrative they were already advancing. He gave them the much yearned for cover. And I wouldn't be surprised if down the road we found out that this report that Schiff did and most of what Schiff did and most of what Schiff said was sort of working grouped, sort of focus grouped with a bunch of reporters saying, hey, you know, like the old journalist where they used to get together and email each other and go, hey, this is how we should message on this particular thing to really screw Democrats. I wouldn't be surprised if if we found out that Adam Schiff has kind of been coordinating with a whole bunch of other people and reporters in general, because, well, that's what the left does. They work together. They are a collective, after all, are they not? All right. Well, let's move on from it. That's enough impeachment for one day. That's way too much impeachment for one day, to be perfectly honest with you. But I just want to touch on another thing or two, depending on time allowances. This story, I saw it tweeted out by NBC News Latino, which I found telling. NBC News Latino. This is apparently news that Latinos, is there news that, you know, different races care about? General world news, because this is U.S. news. This isn't, oh my God, they found new Selena recordings or something. This is actual news that everybody should care about, and actually links to an NBC News website, not the NBC Latino, which they do have, and they have NBC Black, and everybody, the left is racially segregating down to news. That's how pathetic the left is. I tell you, I say it, I repeat myself often, only because A, I'm right, and B, it's brilliant. The only thing that the Democratic Party has changed since the days of slavery is tactics. That's it. Their goals are still the same, from Jim Crow on through now, from the Klan days to the current days. They just changed tactics. The goals are the same. It's segregation now, segregation forever and always, or whatever the hell the quote was from Democrat George Wallace. That is who they are, and they're now segregating news. You want to have a separate school dance for people of your race? Democrats will champion the cause for you, unless, of course, you're white and straight. I mean, you could probably have a gay dance, and they would be in support of it if it was all white people. But if you're white and straight, forget it. You can be run over by a wood chipper for all they care. But I saw this targeted towards Latinos, which is kind of interesting because it really addresses an issue that is more specific to Asia. But I don't know if there's an NBC News Asia. Now, the left doesn't really consider Asians to be a minority. Again, just look at the admissions policy at Harvard. The story in NBC News, U.S. to impose visa restrictions for pregnant women. The Trump administration, this is a subheadline, the Trump administration has been restricting all forms of immigration, but the president has been particularly plagued by the issue of birthright citizenship. Oh, he's been particularly plagued, has he? The Trump administration is coming out with new visa restrictions aimed at restricting birth tourism, in which women travel to the U.S. to give birth so their children can have a coveted U.S. passport. Now, this should bother everybody. This is a scam. This is a massive, massive, gaping, seeping wound in our immigration policy. It should not be allowed. No other country in the world. You just show up 9 months pregnant, squirt out your kid and go, there's a citizen. Give us benefits. And when they're 18 years old, they're going to get me through chain migration, my citizenship. So it's all good. That's not allowed. It's insane. It's a bastardization of the post-Civil War, making sure Democrats did not deny citizenship to ex-slaves amendments. But now this is causing a big controversy. Even Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has gotten into the mix. Why? Because if there's racism to be cried, she shall hear its siren call and go right to it. She tweeted out the story, because apparently she follows NBC Latino. She said, pregnant women. This administration is now targeting pregnant women. When you single out the most vulnerable, the cruelty is the point. Hashtag abolish ICE. Hashtag breakup CBP, Customs and Border Patrol. Yeah. Women are either the strongest creatures on the face of the earth, as these leftists routinely tell us, and they can do anything and need to be treated equally in every respect of life, no matter what, or they are the most vulnerable. They are the weakest and in need of our help. Which one is it? They want to have it both ways. You want to have your cake and eat it too, ladies. But sorry, 1 minute on the lips, a lifetime on the hips. Am I right, girls? I'm right. Last note. I hate the race baiting crap, but that's where the left lives. Because policy ideas, their policies aren't popular. If you go down below the 50,000 foot view of random concepts of nobody should die on the streets, right? Yeah, nobody should die on the streets. Well, then I see everybody supports socialized medicine. That's not what they said. Last note. Joe Concha tweeted this out, and I responded to it, and it is Joe Concha of The Hill. It tells you just how we're paying attention to this impeachment thing, and I hope I'm paying attention to it more than you are. I hope you're able to live free and prosper while I have this on in a TV in a room and can't escape it for work purposes. I'm paid to pay attention to it, but I'm not paid well enough to pay attention to it that much. Joe Concha tweeted out primetime numbers from last night, meaning the first night of the impeachment trial, on impeachment are really telling in terms of American apathy, fatigue, frustration with the whole process as we move to the Senate. Total viewers from 8 to 11 p.m. Fox News, 3.51 million. MSNBC, 2.53 million. CNN, 1.51 million average viewers, prime time. Those numbers are up slightly from an average regular night, but barely. Fox News routinely gets 3 to 3.2 million people on an average night. MSNBC can get up to 3 million, depending on who their guest lineup is, but generally about 2.3 to 2.5 million. CNN gets 900,000 to 1.2 million. So you see, over the course of 3 hours, the American people aren't watching. These are barely out of line with a normal night. The public doesn't care. Democrats spent a month preparing this show, and nobody came to see it. It's like a Broadway bomb. You hear of these plays that last for 2 weeks and then they close? If this were a Broadway play, it would close. The producers would cut their losses, cut bait, and run. But we're the producers. We, the taxpayers, are footing the bill. Nobody up there for the Democrats is risking anything. Adam Schiff not going to get reelected with 75% of the vote in his wildly liberal district? Please. If anything, this raises his stature. Jerry Nadler can barely walk, can barely stay awake, and he'll win with 80% of the vote in his New York district. What do they have to lose? We're paying them to do this. We're paying them to implement their campaign strategy. Nobody cares, but we're not the audience. The American public isn't the audience. The Democratic base that they've been promising this to is the audience. They need to find a way to get people excited to vote for Democrats in the fall, because the Democrats candidates sure as hell aren't doing it. Anyway, that is all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening. You can email me, Derek@dailycaller.com. Appreciate it. I haven't been too good with the emails of late, but then I haven't been too good with holding down food or water for much of the week. I'm better now. I'll be better in the future at the email. Appreciate you listening. The website, patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast. Appreciate all the support you get there. Quinn is feeling better. She has eaten all but, it looks like, 3 of her French fries. And even though she says she's waking up, she'll be soon going to bed. Hopefully you will too. And be back here tomorrow, where we'll have Liz Harrington of the Republican National Committee. We'll talk 2020, we'll talk impeachment, and whatever else comes up as we sit down with Liz. We'll see you then.
I thought it was dazzling.